So I'm Graham Lloyd. I'm the general manager and CEO of Dairy Farmers of Ontario. We're the milk marketing board with the delegated responsibility for the quality of milk, the production and supply of milk to processors in the province of Ontario, and then through a relationship through our P5 or four other provinces, and at the national level we coordinate the milk requirements as well.
What's the makeup then in terms of maybe the farms you represent or type of milk that you're moving?
Well, we move the raw milk to the processors once it's in the, and we build the processors for the milk. The processors, one of the strengths of the Canadian system is processors get the milk they need when they need it. And so we then within the province of Ontario, we have approximately 75 processors. And they process all types of dairy products from butter, powder, to fluid milk and flavored beverages, ice cream, yogurt, cheeses, etc. We have just under 3,500 farms. The average size of herd in Ontario is approximately 80 cows. And we produce 3 billion liters on an annual basis.
Seems like one day maybe we are getting closer to having a finalized NAFTA agreement. From the Canadian side, I don't know if dairy would ever have seen this much momentum or standstill at the end. What's kind of the feedback from farmers in Canada as you've watched these talks progress and kind of the feeling of the farmers in the area?
Well, there's always a bit of insecurity, clearly, when you become a major target. And we've certainly been in the news daily within the Canadian news, obviously, and then certainly when the president makes some of the statements that he's been making, it always causes a little bit of unrest and insecurity. But with that said, we've received reassurance from our prime minister, and certainly most recently the premier of Ontario and premier of British Columbia has come out, and premier of Quebec on why they want to continue to defend the Canadian dairy system. And you know, it makes a lot of sense why the system wants to be defended. You have to look at how it works and in the context of what the U.S. demands are, whether that seems realistic. Certainly, we're proud of the Canadian dairy system as one of the really only dairy systems in the world that's thriving. In the last 2 years or so, we've seen approximately $1 billion worth of new processor investment. And, you know, that's pretty big for Canada, and compare that to the U.S. Take a factor of 10, that'd be like a $10 billion investment across the U.S. And that's investment in all sorts of new processing, from new pizza expansion to ice cream to infant formula to ultrafiltration plants. And with that, we've seen in the last really 3 years about 21 or 22% growth on farm. And that growth, unlike some of the growth that you see in the U.S., that growth is actually where the milk is actually being consumed. We don't have an excess of butter fat requirements, for instance, so there's no dumping of milk, and farms aren't going bankrupt. That's new investment, but farm level as well.
Can you talk a little bit more on how the supply management system works and looking at what is consumed versus what the country is exporting?
Yeah, okay, so that's a great question, and I welcome the opportunity to explain it, in that we look at what we call the total requirements are for the country. It's based on a butterfat basis, and so looks at what is the total requirements of the country less what is imported, and whatever that net difference is, we then produce at the farm level. So we issue production quota at a provincial level and then down to a farm level to meet those requirements. And so we work closely with processors to identify or anticipate what their requirements will be. And it's a heavily reliance on economists to estimate where the market will be in 9 or 10 months to make sure that we don't have an excess supply of milk. So that's why it's called supply management, where we're actually controlling the amount of supply to meet what is the domestic requirements. As it pertains to export, we don't actually produce milk at the farm level for export purposes. It's done on a domestic level. The products that do get exported would be when there's the excess or surplus skim product, because we base it on a butterfat basis. And so on a world level, I think Canada represents less than 1% of exports.
A lot of the hang-up seems to be around that Class 7 pricing system. What's the backstory there and how it's being used?
Yeah, so that's a Class 7 was designed in response to actually the U.S.'s creation of dye-filtered milk. So, you have to go back in time, three to four years ago. The U.S. Had created this, designed this product called dye-filtered milk. It was not permitted to be used in the U.S. U.S. processors were not allowed to use it in their processing products. And it is a product designed to actually replace skim and skim milk. It's a protein product. And so that was, our market was getting flooded by that. And so in order to respond to that, Class 6, Class 7 was created at a competitive level. So the concept behind it was to, there was no barriers whatsoever with respect to the permitted imports of the U.S. product, but we changed the pricing of the domestic product so that we could compete and then give Canadian processors the choice. Do you want to use domestic product or continue to import the dye-filtered milk? And to this day, there continues to be importation of dye-filtered milk. So when we hear people use the rhetoric that it's been blocked and barred and we've had regulatory changes that stop that export from the U.S., that's just actually untrue.
The other argument you see is Canadian tariffs on U.S. dairy products exceeding 200 to 300%. How does the tariff system work if for the U.S. companies importing into the country?
So there are certainly, just like the U.S., there are tariffs. But what happens is in Canada, that those tariffs only get put on domestic dairy products when a certain threshold of imports have been made. So there's something called, and not to get too technical, but there's something called TRQs, which is permitted imports to a certain amount. So currently, with the most recent trade deal with TPP and CETA, Canada actually imports tariff-free upwards of 15% of its domestic requirements. And, you know, when you compare that to the U.S., the U.S. As a nation imports less than 3% of its requirements. So when we hear people complain that we're a closed border, we get kind of frustrated because it's just actually not true as well. So once you do exceed that 15%, tariffs would then start to get attracted. So then you look at what's happening with respect to NAFTA or the trade between Canada and the U.S. The U.S. benefits most recently, I saw, in 2017 from a Brookings Institute's report, U.S. exported $735 million worth of dairy products to Canada, and we exported to them about $130 million. So there was a trade balance or imbalance to the U.S. benefit of $600 million. So that's the other thing that we find challenging when we hear how it's a very unfair deal. What we see is that the U.S. dairy system benefits the Canadian market to a tune of $600 million. We question why they need more access to our market. From our perspective, what we see to be the challenge or issue with the U.S. dairy system is lack of controls and overproduction. And so the need to increasingly find new markets to place their dairy products. But they already have a significant benefit from the Canadian marketplace, like I say, to $600 million. So the question we often ask our government is, why do we have to give up more?
This week there were reports that concessions potentially could be made of the same streamline what's being done between Canada and the EU and the Pacific Rim. What are some of those trade deals, and do you see that as a compromise in these negotiations?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, the EU, which is something we call the CETA, C-E-T-A, which is the Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement with the United States, with the EU partners, that was for cheese primarily, and that's 17,000 tons of cheese is permitted to come in tariff-free. With respect to the what was the TPP, is now called the CPTPP when the U.S. pulled out, that gave access to the Canadian market of 3.25%. And so we hear those talks with respect to happening in NAFTA, and that's when we return to the fact that the U.S. already has this massive trade imbalance to their benefit. And so really opening up our market for more access was really insignificant to the U.S. market. And I say that in the following context. When you take the overproduction that's happening in Michigan, Wisconsin, and New York, I was reading an article published by, I think it was, well, it was out of Illinois University, I think, citing that there is excess production without a market in those three states, that it is the equivalent to what Ontario produces in a day. And so, you know, it would flood our marketplace and not have any benefit to what is currently the problems or challenges that the U.S. system is facing.
Do you think dairy was cherry-picked as just a sticking point in negotiations, or why do you feel like it's coming down to this?
Well, it's often, you know, every country has its important areas of trade protection. You know, the U.S. has far greater protection in its sugar market, for instance, than Canada does even in its dairy. So dairy is a significant one in Canada. The current challenges that we're being faced in the negotiations seem to be about Chapter 19, which is the dispute resolution, the access to cultural protections in Canada, and then dairy. And we're not naive that it's a, we think it's something that is important to President Trump because of the votes in Wisconsin. They're trying to get increased access, but it's been our position that that access actually will not benefit the U.S. to any extent and only cause harm to the Canadian marketplace.
Looking globally at the milk supply, Canada on a global scale, if you're producing the same amount as Wisconsin, what are those big players globally that are causing more milk glut?
Well, I think it's common. The United States would be obviously one of the big players, New Zealand, Australia to an extent, although they're having significant trouble in their country with respect to bankruptcies. And you know, I digress for a second, but Canada doesn't have any bank. We don't face bankruptcies in our dairy sector. The farms are receiving a fair market price and are growing because we actually limit the amount of milk that can be produced. And so I think it's mainly those three countries. And then certainly China seems to have been increasing its production for its domestic uses. And so that has found a challenge for those other exporting countries such as U.S., New Zealand, and Australia to a lesser extent. Plus, you look at the challenge that's facing Europe right now where they have a massive surplus of skim powders. They have hundreds of tons of excess skim powder in warehouses throughout Europe because they've had an overproduction problem.
Graham, any other thoughts to leave us with as you watch these talks continue?
No, thank you for this opportunity. I think it's, you know, the more people understand how the systems work, that this isn't a simple economic model that can easily be dismantled. This is extremely important to Canada. It's important to our rural economy. It's one of the reasons our rural economy is thriving. And it's important for people to understand. I think that's why the Canadian government continues to defend it. As I said, it is a model that is working to the benefit of all Canadians, to the benefit of our processors, to the benefit of to the farmers, and obviously to the benefit of the consumers and the government. And, you know, and we have no tax subsidies, right? There's no farm bill here. There's no emergency buyouts or subsidies. You know, I know the U.S. just announced a $12 billion subsidy program for the dairy. That's unheard of in Canada.